everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies like My Date with the President's Daughter
and the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.
Welcome to the Tudor Dixon podcast. I'm excited today because I've heard all of these different rumors about George Soros's life, and now I have an expert here with me. So I know that's probably not the guy you want to talk about, but because he's the guy that's on the other side, I feel like it's good to know about him. So Matt Palumbo is here with me. He is the content manager for the Bongino Report and the author of The Man Behind the Curtain, Inside the Secret Network of George Soros. Matt, welcome.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on.
So I'm really, his life has always fascinated me because I've heard all these stories and I need to know if they're true, because I heard that when he was just 14, he was kind of taken in by an SS officer or someone who is connected to the Nazi regime, and then was actually involved in the taking of property from Jewish people. But I know that there's been disputes. You're the expert. What exactly is his childhood story?
Right. So you're referring to, and actually a lot of people have seen a 60 Minutes interview about this, where he was talking about his upbringing. And during the German occupation of Hungary, he was assigned to one of these so-called Jewish councils. And what they were groups of Jewish people that Nazis would have organized together. And they would be in charge of basically deporting, rounding up and confiscating from their fellow Jews. And many of the people who joined these councils were under this delusion that they would be exempt from it, exempt from the Holocaust, exempt from the Nazis' oppression. So Soros was one of the people who worked for them. And, you know, while someone could try to make the argument that while he was coerced to do it, it was for his own life, Soros' father, Tivadar, hopefully I'm pronouncing that right, wrote an autobiography, and he actually talks about this incident and said that he thought his son seemed to enjoy the work to some extent. And Soros was interviewed by 60 Minutes about this, and the interviewer did try to give him the out of, well, you know, certainly you did this at gunpoint. And Soros very coldly replies, like almost in financial terms, of, well, if I didn't do it, someone else was going to do it anyway. And you know, it was asked if it's something that kept him up at night, and he said no. Now, the other thing you were referencing was him being undertaken or taken under the wing of a Nazi officer. There was a person his father put him in touch with to basically conceal his Jewish identity and then later help him flee Hungary. And this man is basically credited with saving a young George Soros's life. And, you know, one thing that just tells you about Soros's character is this man throughout his entire life was never publicly identified by George Soros or thanked. There was never any recognition of this one guy when I was a kid saved me, thank God. It was some guy, I think, at the Daily Mail figured out who he was after his death and that he was this figure who saved Soros. So he got no recognition for that from George whatsoever. And these are just stories very early on in his life that tell you exactly the kind of person he is, and nothing has changed since then.
Well, and I think that's the part where people go, gosh, he was a kid and I have a 14-year-old, and I think right. about my 14-year-old now going through this. There is something that tells me, though, that there would be that internal regret. And I think that what you pointed out there, where he's like, you know, if I hadn't done it, somebody else would have done it.
Yeah.
It just seems very inhumane to think that way when you know what was happening and what you were involved in. And so he was kind of on that other side, but that also is a strange upbringing. Regardless, you know, obviously everybody who lived through that time, there was massive trauma. There are lots of scars, and a lot of times trauma leads to a lot of dysfunction in life. And so George Soros has kind of been a puppet master of sorts in the political world. So how did he go from that to becoming this multi-billionaire?
Right. So he ended up studying at the London School of Economics for college. He went through there for all his degrees through a PhD. And then he ended up coming to America, and his initial goal was he'd make $1 million and then go back to Europe. Unfortunately, that isn't what happened. And since then, he became he became one of the most successful investors of all time. In fact, if you go by it's something like $1 million invested with him would be worth $2 billion today. Now, granted, this is, you know, from like the '50s or the '60s onwards, so you would have had to hold for quite a while. But you know, there's only one other investor, a guy named Ray Dalio, who runs a hedge fund called Bridgewater Associates, that has ever produced a higher percent returns than Soros. And you know, that alone itself should leave people a bit skeptical of how is that even possible. And he's had a number of insider trading scandals over the years. He very famously broke the pound, the English pound, and other currencies. And he developed this theory in finance called reflexivity, which is just a fancy way of saying that there are self-fulfilling prophecies in finance. If he can hop into a trend that people think is going to happen, the trend will then happen. And at some point in his career, he realized this actually applies to the media as well, in that the media has this effect of being kind of national horse blinders on the American public, in that they can really only see through whatever the media tells them. And you know, until there's alternate media, that's really the only choice they had. So, you know,
political propaganda.
Correct. So, if you want to push a narrative that America is horrible and racist, you only focus on stories of that angle, and then it becomes true. And then people themselves.
Well, another thing that he would have learned in Nazi Germany.
Correct. Yeah. So there. And actually, one more point on the Nazi Germany thing. It was even more bizarre that he didn't have any cognizance of the optics of what he was saying, in that even if you are someone who legitimately doesn't care about what you did, you'd think you'd know to pretend and go, oh my God, it was the worst thing I had to do. My whole life I've been trying to repent for it by doing blah, blah, blah. And he didn't even have that thought. He was just, yeah, it happened, you know, oh well.
And I think that is why some of his, I guess, political investments have been so disturbing. But as you're saying this, as you're telling me this about the other investments, I'm like, okay, well, is he that? Could it be that he is this involved in the political world because there is insider trading? Has he made his fortune by that connection and then increased that connection? I mean, it's kind of like a chicken or an egg thing. What was it, his political connections that got him the big money, and then he puts the money back in and gets more political connections?
Yeah, well, so there is actually this myth among, like, I guess, center-left business people that Soros was responsible for helping transition a lot of post-Soviet countries to capitalism. And what that really means is, when a lot of these countries broke up, you had all of these state-owned assets, and there's the question of, well, who gets them? And in most of the cases, just a select few of oligarchs that get assigned those assets and make billions of dollars overnight. And Soros, through his political connections, was able to, because of his control, you know, over certain people, and I'm sure, you know, through bribes and all that, was able to buy up a lot of these state-owned assets for pennies on the dollar and make all this money for himself. So that, him benefiting from corruption, was sort of spun as, oh, he was helping these countries go capitalist. If they were going socialist and he could have made money, he would have done it too. But he was, I guess, smart enough on the optics of that to spin it in his favor.
So ultimately, he doesn't leave the United States. He stays here, and he decides that he is going to play in politics and influence modern day U.S. politics. And so he has been increasingly involved. I think that in the last 10 years, we've probably heard more and more about George Soros and what he's been doing. Now, he's played in, I would say, what Republicans saw as non-traditional politics, and they weren't really in those spaces. And so those prosecutors, those DAs, and suddenly we started to see this uptick of crime in the U.S. And it was all of a sudden this connection, like, oh, wait a minute, he's getting all these soft on crime DAs elected and prosecutors elected, and now we have a big crime problem. But what is the end game there? I don't get it.
That's a thing that even I struggle to answer, but you kind of have to just assume it's chaos. You know, like, I think there's a tendency among conservatives to, at least historically, I think it's shifting for the better, that they kind of view liberals as people who are just misguided and would agree with us if they knew better.
Like this Pollyanna view. I mean, if we could just tell them. They would agree.
That's the case of the DAs. And like violent crimes have very reliable statistics because if someone gets murdered, it's getting reported. But if you're in an area where there's no point in reporting a theft, paradoxically, those areas see a decline in theft on paper because no one's reporting them. And there was a single month in San Francisco where Target and the San Francisco Police Department had a system where Target could effectively report 100% of shoplifting incidents. Now, they ended up dropping the system because police still didn't respond to them. But there was a single month where 100% of incidents at the three Target locations in San Francisco were actually reported. And just from those three locations, the theft rate in the entire city doubled for that month. So that's, and there's like,
but it didn't really double. That's correct. The sad thing.
Yeah. That's, and there's tens of thousands. I mean, the thing is close to 100,000 small businesses in San Francisco. So you can just extrapolate from that what is the real crime rate. And it's like an upside down world where you will be seeing homes that are worth millions of dollars. You'll be seeing all these nice cars. And then there are warnings about theft as if you're in, you know, an extremely low income area. And, you know, these are kind of places where people might pay a premium to avoid that. And yet that's right on your doorstep.
Well, and that's why we've seen so many people suddenly frustrated in these communities. And yet they continue to vote for this. But yeah. I think that is the combination of what you were talking about earlier, his influence in the media, his understanding of propaganda. And I'm telling you, it's become so extreme because it doesn't matter if it's true. I mean, even in Michigan, they spliced my words together and made me say things that I didn't say in commercials. And afterward, they openly asked Gretchen Whitmer, did you know that these were not the things she said? And she was fine with it. She said, yeah, we knew that, but we won. So they are manipulating the minds of the people, fully manipulating. The not reporting crime is also a manipulation. If you think about that, because you keep seeing Biden come out and say, oh, we've got the lowest crime ever. Well, you also have, let's go back to California. You have this, we're not going to put you in jail if you or arrest you if you steal under $900. And therefore, that's not recorded as crimes either. So as you let these people out, as you don't charge them, when they go back out on the streets, there's no record that they did what they did. And so even though we feel the crime, we know it's more unsafe when we go outside. There's more criminals on the street. There's more problems. We don't know. We don't have those numbers because they aren't recorded.
Yeah, and that's actually what you described as a problem with the whole philosophy of second chances, and that it's impossible to enforce. Because if I go out, rob a store in San Francisco, if I somehow get arrested, which is unlikely, and the judge says, you know what, you messed up, I'll give you a second chance. If I go do that again and get arrested, I don't have a criminal record. So if I get a different judge, they're going to say, oh, well, you know, you messed up once, you get a second chance. And in theory, you could have an infinite number of second chances by that kind of policy. And, you know, there's this common thread with these DAs where criminals are somehow the real victims. And, you know, there's never a single person on the planet who's treated as if they could just be a person who's morally loose, who wants to steal. It has to be, well, they're discriminated against by society in some reason. They will speak about crime as if, you know, one more after school program being solved would just have prevented all of this. And crime exists everywhere in the world. And there are European countries where the income rates are, you know, 1/10 of that of the U.S. and their crime rates are, you know, 90% lower. Like, you know, Albania, well, Romania.
Like in D.C., yeah. They just literally came out. What was it? It was like, I think it was a district attorney, I'm not sure, that came out and said, we're not going to arrest ourselves out of this carjacking wave. It's like, but yes, you can.
Yeah.
That's exactly how you do it.
Yeah. You know, El Salvador is the best example of that. And, you know, they had the advantage in their country where for some reason their gang members tattoo exactly what gang they're part of. So it was very easy to arrest them. Mm-hmm. But they at one point had a murder rate of something like 150 murders per 100,000 people, which it was the highest in the world at the time. And for reference, that was five times higher than Chicago's. Well, they arrested almost every gang member in their country, and their murder rate is now 75% lower than ours. So they went from being five times Chicago to basically as safe as Vermont or Maine or a state like that, or a Midwestern state, in a single, you know, in less than a decade. And they arrested themselves out of the problem. So yeah, it seems to work.
Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll continue next on the Tudor Dixon podcast.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You hear people talk about why they're running for office, right? But I mean, as you listen to these presidential candidates, it should be a given that one reason we have government is to keep you safe, that public safety should be a top priority. And not only does that matter in your town or on the border or nationally, like these are things that you kind of come to expect from the United States. And I think it's been slowly eroding. Like I said, over the past 10 years, we've started to be like, oh, wow, wait, George Soros's name is on a lot of these lists of donor lists. And a lot of these people that got elected that are not arresting people are connected to that. One other thing, I mean, I think that your comment on chaos is interesting. I think chaos is a way to fully take down a country. And there's only one way to really take down the United States. And that would be to create chaos to the point where the country is so unstable that then someone else can roll in. And so you have to wonder, well, what is his end game here? And he's now moved on and he's retired and supposedly he's handing the baton to his son. And everybody's like, oh, maybe this is an option. And the son's like, no, I'm going to be even more political. I'm going to be more involved. But we're watching this from the standpoint of secretaries of state. And I just want to bring this up quickly because we watched Katie Hobbs. She was secretary of state. She was a George Soros candidate. In Michigan, Jocelyn Benson, a secretary of state, George Soros candidate. They are all, as Jocelyn Benson would say, they're all coordinating. And the leftist media is like, of course you're coordinating. You have to make sure that you protect everyone from these election people. You know, we've got to save democracy. But I think it is kind of interesting, as you talk about chaos, to see these folks who are doing crazy things, like even Gretchen Whitmer in the state of Michigan is now giving people $500 to take an illegal immigrant into their home, and she'll pay the rent for 10 years or for 12 months if you take someone into your home. I mean, bringing these people into our state, that to me is causing chaos. And again, someone who took money from George Soros, but the Secretaries of State, Katie Hobbs, ran her own election for governor. Jocelyn Benson has always also come out and said she's going to run for governor. So again, she will run her own election for governor. They get into these Secretary of State positions. They kind of change the rules around elections and they leave people on the voter list. They don't clean things up. And then suddenly they're running for the highest elected seat in the state. Doesn't that seem a little fishy?
Yeah, and Soros actually started a project in the early 2000s called the Secretary of State Project. And the whole point was to stop the prevent a kind of, the whole recount situation that happened with George W. Bush, where he, marginally squeaked out the victory in Florida. So he did that for the express purpose of presidential elections. And as we know, he's increasingly gone local. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense that he would do that. And one of the things you kind of notice in studying these people is, yes, they are all connected. I mean, even within the Biden administration, there are a dozen or so people that have at least been connected with Soros and that they've worked for a Soros-funded group, have served on the board of a Soros group. Neera Tanden and Ron Klain, in some capacity, were on the board of the Center for American Progress, which is Soros-linked. Our Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, his parents are major donors to Soros' endeavors. And in fact, at Central European University, which is started by George Soros, they have a digital archive of various books, and the archive is named after Antony Blinken's parents. And one of the first things he did after taking office was he sanctioned one of his biggest critics in Albania, who is the first democratically elected president in the country. And Soros tried to sway him and failed, and I guess got revenge two or three decades later from that. And he now can't enter the U.S. So, a very petty guy, I guess, but he has an enormous amount of influence, and all these people he influences are connected to some degree.
But I mean, wouldn't, just going back to being a 14-year-old and watching the behind the scenes of everything that's happening in Nazi Germany, and everybody's like, oh, he was 13, and by the time he turned 15, the war was over. But he was, that was a critical time of learning. You think about, this is your freshman year in high school, so you're learning not only a lot of social stuff, but you're learning life lessons. He is behind the scenes with one of the most manipulative regimes in history that was able to twist people's minds and make them believe that what he was doing was okay. And you think about, how could that possibly have ever happened? But now we see this happening on college campuses. We've seen this situation with Hamas, where people have come out and supported Hamas. And you're like, what are you talking? I mean, even I think the most interesting one was the letter from Osama bin Laden, when recently college students started to say, gosh, poor Osama bin Laden, this really makes sense why he did what he did. And people in the United States are like, how is this happening? But isn't this what he would have learned, how to do this, how to manipulate the human mind?
Well, yeah. And actually, when Hamas took power in 2007, Soros wrote a letter complaining that the U.S. and Israel didn't want to work with what he called a democratically elected government. Just to show his judgment. And it's all, it is funny in context of how, if you criticize Soros, it's called anti-Semitic. So it's like, I think the worst anti-Semite on Twitter has never done the Nazi Party's bidding. And,
right.
It's funny in that regard. And you mentioned the Osama bin Laden letter, and liberals were citing it to kind of claim that, oh, it wasn't because he hated us for our freedom, it's because of our foreign policy. And I don't think they read the letter, because yes, he did criticize our foreign policy, but he also criticized American morality, that we let women have rights, that gay people aren't discriminated against, et cetera, et cetera. So he covered both bases there, and the liberals just ignored half of the letter for some reason.
Yeah. So what happens now that you have, I think a lot of people were like, okay, George Soros is really old, so this is probably going to go away. It's not going away. Yeah. He's passing this down to his son. His son has been watching all of this, and they have their fingers in everything. The media is very controlling. The media has had a huge effect on the minds of Americans. And I do think that we saw that most clearly on election night in 2016, because they told us who to vote for and we didn't. And you could see in their faces, they were like, what? How could we lost this? And some of them outright said, we are the ones that are supposed to be controlling the minds of the people. Like they're so hook, line, and sinker into this, we control the narrative and you follow what we say. But I mean, how pathetic is that for those far left media organizations that these people are just pawns in his game? I mean, they're just pieces on his chessboard.
Well, what is kind of incredible to me is that despite people like Soros and the overwhelming majority of the media being liberal, of people who identify with a party, it's pretty much split between Republicans and Democrats evenly. And that's with a media that's 90% plus liberal. I mean, if the media was 90% Republican, I think the numbers would be overwhelmingly right wing to left. And yet, even with 90% market share, the best they can achieve is a break even. Now, when it comes to Alex Soros taking over, he has $20 billion to work with. And you know, when it comes to predicting what's going to happen, I would say the minimum is just everything that's been happening so far gets continued. And then, you know, the worst case is he adds some issues on top of that, which seems likely. The only thing we have that's, I guess, a positive is that he is sort of the man in front of the curtain, and that he just brags on his social media of every single meeting he does with every politician he does. So it makes it very easy to track his influence. And I'm sure he'll say it's anti-Semitic to view his Instagram posts, but at least we know he's talking to him.
Does he have a family?
Not that I know of. I mean, I didn't look too much into that, although I have tried to interview him because I want to do another book. And I know he knows who I am, but does not, I guess, like me for obvious reasons.
Gosh, it sounds like we need to find him a good conservative woman.
Well, isn't he dating Huma Abedin?
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he posted on Valentine's Day a photo of them together. So I guess that's good for him.
Yeah, that's a weird relationship.
Very odd, yeah.
She has a strange history. So, that's...
She knows how to pick them.
Yeah, right, exactly. I'm like, I'm probably not going to pry her away from that one. She's made some mistakes in the past. So I don't know how we step in there. So let's take a quick commercial break. We'll continue next on the Tudor Dixon podcast.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am, like I am, where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how, I don't know where, I don't know what. God, if you show me, God, if you tell me, God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking forward to 2024, what do you think? I mean, he seems to be losing a little bit of control over this because now people are literally named Soros funded, and that's become a negative connotation. So what does that do to the Sun? But what does that also do to a lot of these people who are running in law enforcement positions to be elected as attorneys general and to be elected as district attorneys and secretaries of state, and those positions where you are having an influence over whether it is how a judgment is held or prosecuting someone or even elections? Now Soros funded is becoming a bad name. So how much influence does he have going forward?
So there actually has been a decline in the number of Soros DAs. I think we're down to around 70 from 75. And there were some who won and then some who lost. So I found that I wrote in the New York Post, I think last month, that I tracked down about a dozen or so that had either been ousted, resigned, or just not won re-election. And the most common thing was just them dropping out and refusing to run for re-election, knowing how humiliating it would be for them to lose. But then there's people like Kim Fox of the whole Jesse Smollett fame was one of them. And then of the ousted ones, I think the most notable was Chase Abudin in San Francisco, who, you know, I love to say was too crazy for San Francisco. And he kind of shattered the liberal narrative that only, you know, it was racist people motivated to oust him because it was actually the Hispanics and Asians in San Francisco who voted in larger numbers than the white residents to oust him. So that whole narrative of it being racially motivated breaks down completely. It's only racially motivated in that those communities were disproportionately affected by those weekend crime policies. And Soros himself actually denied ever having funded Budin after that happened. While he was in office and it was alleged that he funded him, he never saw fit to clarify. Only once he was ousted, then he tried to pretend otherwise. And he, of course, did fund him. He funded him through a PAC. And he's trying to do this whole degree of separation argument where it's, no, the PAC funded him, not me who funded the PAC. It's logic only a fact checker would find convincing, I guess.
Yeah, right. Well, I think that some of these communities that have been affected by the soft on crime prosecutors and all those folks out there, they are seemingly turning against the Democrats because of that. We've even heard rumblings of folks in Detroit, folks in Flint, who are saying, look, Democrats haven't come out here to help us. We're in a bad situation. We've seen the violence increase in Detroit. Detroit will say, oh, but our murder rates are down. While we compete every year for the top space as the most violent city in the country. In Michigan alone, we have 5 of the top 20 most violent cities in the country. So you look at that and you start to pick apart these blue states where people are suffering the most is these communities where they continue to let repeat offenders go back out and hurt. And then they don't actually, it's almost as though a lot of these people who continually steal, rob, assault, those types of things, they're not put away until they murder. And so they're like, oh, well, once they murdered, we got rid of them. But I think folks in these communities are starting to notice, hey, we're just sitting ducks here. We're just waiting for the bad guy to finally commit the crime that puts him away.
Yeah, crime is an incredibly concentrated problem. Like if you have your crime in your city double or triple, it doesn't even necessarily mean there's 2 to 3 times as many criminals. It's more often the case that the same group of criminals is just emboldened. And in Chicago, I saw an estimate once that pretty much the entire murder epidemic is attributable to 2,000 people in a city of millions.
Wow.
And how hard is it really to arrest 2,000 people? I mean, the whole liberal vision of, okay, we need free everything so that no one has to worry about money and also the best education system overnight and blah, 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 and guaranteed income. All of that work versus, which doesn't even really work, versus just putting 2,000 people in jail. Well, the latter seems a heck of a lot easier to do. And when it comes to people waking up on the crime issue, I think in those areas, the GOP should just be a single issue party because those people probably don't like the party's whole package, but on the issue that affects them the most on crime, that's just what we need to be to them is the anti-crime party. So
the story you told about the country that rounded up the folks that had the gang tattoos and suddenly their murder rate went way down. Mm-hmm. I mean, to that point, Chicago should be the same situation. You know, the bad guys round them up, once, you know, you take out the leaders and the next guy gets bumped up, you take him out too. You get him in jail, you're out of, they're out of business. You know, it's the same concept that we have with Hamas and what Netanyahu has been trying to say. We got to take out the leaders and then we can free these people. But as you said, you've got people like George Soros who are like, oh, work with this new democracy. They're lovely. Before I let you go, though, I do want you to talk a little bit about the Bongino Report. Yeah. I will sometimes fill in for hosts on different shows. And, you know, anytime we're doing a podcast here where we're covering breaking news, it's like my number one place I go, because I'm like, okay, if I need to know what's going on in the world, I know that if I go to the Bongino Report, they're going to have everything there. So for folks who are interested in the news and you don't want to go to just one source, explain a little bit about what you guys do, because I think it's fantastic.
Yeah. So there was sort of a growing awareness that Drudge has been moving to the left politically, and no one's really sure entirely why. It would only be sold it, or, you know, it might have a vendetta against Trump or something like that. But at the end of 2019, Dan and I launched BonginoReport.com, and we have a number of sections just on like Capitol Hill news, culture war issues, econ. We have a section called Swamp Watch, which is just sort of more corruption type stories. I'm trying to think of the other section. We have national security, opinion, entertainment, sports, and health. I'm glad I remember them all. And then we do like about eight stories or so per section. I mean, it would look really bad if I didn't, obviously. So we do eight stories per section. Then we have like a top story section, which is rotated more often. It's more just breaking news. And it's just sort of just a general overview of what we think the best stories from the best sources are. And we'll very rarely quote some liberal sources if they stumble upon a right-wing opinion, but it's mainly just the highest quality conservative news we can find and just stuff we think will be of the most use for someone in a daily discussion about politics.
Well, I really appreciate what you do, and I hope more people will head over to the Bongino Report. It's updated constantly, so if you are looking for what the latest news is on a certain subject, they're going to have it. Matt Palumbo, thank you so much for being on today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And thank you all for joining us on the Tudor Dixon Podcast. For this episode and others, head over to our website, TudorDixonPodcast.com. You can subscribe right there, or you can go to the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. And join us next time on the Tudor Dixon Podcast. Have a blessed day.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Leesa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Leesa.com/iHeart. That's Leesa.com/iHeart.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.